be seated. Thanks for being here to worship with us today. It's good to be home. I was gone for a couple of weeks, went with a group of senior adults traveling on a bus to see the Creation Museum in Ohio and the Ark in Ohio, not Noah's, but a replica of his. It was an incredible trip. The 5 days on the bus was not real incredible, but I did learn a lot of things about some of our senior adults. See me afterwards. That's interesting, but had a good time. If you ever get a chance to go to see the Creation Museum or the Ark exhibit, the replica, please go do it. It is well worth the effort that you would make to get out there. All of our kids and teenagers, everybody, you need to see it. It's just very, very impressive. Genesis 33, open your Bible there, and we'll wind up there in a little while as we work our way through continuing looking at the life of Jacob and what was going on and what has happened. Had the privilege while we were on the bus. We were on the bus for two different Sundays, and I didn't get out of preaching. Each Sunday, I got to preach on the bus. That's kind of a chore, too, standing on a swaying bus and holding a microphone and a Bible and trying to preach. But I got to preach the Sunday going and the Sunday coming back. On the bus, it was a captive audience. They couldn't get away, which was good. But we covered the same chapters, the same sections that y'all were covering here. Of course, my outlines were probably different than Paul's, but so everybody that was on the trip, you should be up to date on what we're doing. Let me ask you a question this morning. What's more difficult? Is it more difficult to forgive someone, or is it more difficult to be forgiven? Huh? You ever think about that? Which is harder? I was reading a story about two young boys who were fighting and bickering all day long. I mean, they were at each other's throat, just going at it all day long. Came to bedtime, mom was helping them getting ready for bed, and they still hadn't let up. They were still at each other all the time. And finally, the mom just stopped and says, "Guys, cut it out." Looked at the oldest son and said, "Son, what if something happened to you? What if you were to die tonight and you had to go, your brother would never know that you would forgive him?" He says, "Well, all right, well, I'll forgive him tonight. But if I'm alive in the morning, he better watch out." So sometimes that's the way we look at forgiveness. And that's not the way that the Bible looks at forgiveness at all. So back to the question, what's more difficult, to forgive or to be forgiven? Well, your answer, either answer is right. Either one is correct. I mean, to forgive something, think about this. In order to forgive someone, you've got to choose to overlook the past. You have to consciously make a choice to overlook what that person did, the anger, the bitterness, the continued abuse, whatever it is. To forgive someone, you have to overlook that. Second thing, when it comes to forgiving, you have to be willing to give that offender another chance. Not just a second chance, because Jesus told Peter, it's you forgive them 70 times 7, so you're giving them 490 chances. You say, "I've already given them 489, this is the last one." Well, that may be, I don't know. So to forgive someone, it is hard, yes. But to be forgiven, I mean, think about that with me for a minute. To be forgiven means, first of all, you've got to admit you're guilty. I mean, you have to be willing to admit that you have done something that needs to be forgiven. And sometimes we don't like to do that because we like to pass the blame and point our finger at someone else, and we don't want to take the blame ourselves. The second thing that's involved in being forgiven is accepting the forgiveness. And that takes a little bit of humility. Well, that takes a lot of humility. Just humbling ourselves, saying that I've done something worthy, I've done something that needs to be forgiven, and I'm humbling myself enough to accept that offer of forgiveness. And then it means agreeing to a new course of action, to take a different path, to reconcile. So, which is harder? Back to the question, to forgive or to be forgiven? Well, the answer really depends on where you are on the scale, whether you're on the side of the offender or the one who was offended. Where do you fall in the mix in your point of view? I honestly think sometimes it is harder to be forgiven than it is to forgive. I think it's sometimes harder to accept that than it is to forgive someone. Now, the goal of both either forgiving or being forgiven is to restore a relationship, is it not? I mean, isn't the goal of all of that to provide healing and reconciliation and a reunion, that restoration of a broken relationship? Well, as we look at Jacob's life, we can see a lot of need for forgiving and a lot of need for accepting forgiveness. Well, let me review just a little bit, just to kind of bring you up to date, in case you've not been here for the past 7 weeks or so. Jacob was a conniver from the beginning. He was born called the heel grabber, holding on to his brother's ankle, his brother's foot as he's coming out and being born. He was named Jacob, which actually means cheater, someone who is going to lie and cheat and steal. That's what the name means. He cheated his brother out of his birthright by selling him a pot of stew. He deceived his father and stole the family blessing from his brother Esau with the help of his mother. He fled for his life, went to Haran, lived under the thumb of his uncle Laban for 20 years, was cheated by Laban when it came to which daughter he was going to marry. He was cheated by Laban when it came to his wages. On 10 different times, Laban cheated him out of his wages. He was cheated by his uncle Laban. It's kind of ironic, isn't it? A guy named Cheater being cheated by everybody else. He was cheated by his uncle Laban when it came to breeding the flock and getting a better breed of flock and so on and so forth of his sheep. And all of these things happened. He finally got fed up. He flees from the thumb of Laban. He starts to go back because he wants to go back and make amends with his brother Esau. So 20 years he's been under the thumb of Laban. For 20 years, he's had time to think. For 20 years, he's had time to wonder, what's it going to be like if I ever get back with my estranged brother? For 20 years, what's he think? I mean, how does he feel about the hurts of the past? During that course of leaving home and now getting ready to go back and meet with his brothers, he's had two encounters with God. He had one encounter with God where he had this vision of a ladder where angels were ascending and descending and going up and down. And God repeated the promise that he had made to Abraham and to Isaac that you're going to be the father of a great nation. And now he gives that promise to Jacob. His second encounter is when he's on the other side of the river Jabbok waiting to go across to meet with his brother. And he has this wrestling match with God. And God again speaks to him. Well, how's it going to be with his brother? I mean, 20 years since he's seen him, right? It's been 20 years since he tricked his brother. It's been 20 years. I mean, how does he feel? Does he feel shame? Is he ashamed of the fact? Is there remorse in Jacob's life at this point over the fact that he deceived his father? That he lied to his father and he stole his brother's birthright? Last time he saw his brother said, I'm going to kill you. As soon as I'm done mourning, I'm going to kill you. Is there regret in Jacob's life at this point? Does he regret the fact that what he's done to his brother Esau, does he regret that? Does he wonder? Because see, God had made the promise to his mother and his father before he was ever born, that though he was the second born of the twin, the Bible says that the younger would rule over the older. And that was God's plan all along. Has he ever wondered during those 20 years, I wonder what it would have happened had I waited to see what God would have done instead of me trying to work it out on my own? Well, see, I don't know what all those questions were. I don't know if they were swimming through his brain or not, but I know one that was flashing in bright neon lights before his brain every day. What's Esau going to do when I meet him? How is he going to respond? And that was the haunting question that was there all the time. In chapter 32, he sends out some messengers to tell his brother that he's coming. The messengers come back in verse number 6, and they say, hey, we found Esau. He's on his way. But guess what? He's got 400 men with him, and Jacob panics. I would too. I want to restore a relationship with my brother, and he's got 400 men. What does he need 400 men with him? Is he going to kill me? Is he going to wipe out my family? So Jacob decides that He divides his family into a couple of groups, and he puts half of them over here and half of them over there, and he does that because if Esau attacks this group, maybe that group can escape. But what's interesting is he prays. In chapter 32, beginning in verse number 9, he prays, and this is the first prayer that we ever have recorded that Jacob prays. This is what he says. Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac, this is chapter 32, verse 9, O Lord, who said to me, return to your country and your kindred, and I'll do you good. And I'm not worthy of the least of these deeds, your steadfast love and your faithfulness that you've shown to your servant. With only a staff I crossed the Jordan, and now I've become two camps. Deliver me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him that he may come and attack me, and the mothers with the children. But you said, I will surely do you good and make your offspring as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered in the multitude. So he's praying. He's getting ready to meet his brother, and he knows there's 400 men with his brother, and he prays and he cries out to God, and he says, Lord, remember, don't forget the promise you made to Abraham. Don't forget the promise you made to Isaac. Lord, don't forget the promise you made to me. And he recalls those promises that were made to his father and his grandfather, and he confesses the fact that he's unworthy. He is not worthy of anything that God has blessed him with, and he declares that God's goodness just exceeds and abounds over and above anything that he could imagine. But then in verse number 11, he says, God, deliver me because I'm afraid of my brother. Well, he's got every right to be afraid of his brother. His brother's got 400 men with him. And his brother said, next time I see you, I'm going to kill you. So no wonder he's afraid of his brother. And he said, Lord, deliver me. And he said, I'm fearful for my children and the mothers and all the little ones here. And Lord, he said, when I left here, I only had my staff in my hand. But now I'm two camps. I got camels and donkeys and servants and maidservants and children and wives. I've got all this. So Lord, please don't forget. And he reminds God again at the end. He reminds God, he said, don't forget the promise you made that I was going to be the father of a great nation and my descendants were going to number more than the sand of the sea. By the way, Lord, don't forget that, okay? So he cries out to God. And then to appease Esau, he sets forth what I would call an Old Testament example of propitiation. Offering a price to appease a penalty, to pay a penalty. And he offers a whole lot of presents to his brother. He's not dumb. He divides him into three groups. The guy, he sends him 200 female goats, 20 male goats, 200 ewes, 20 rams, 30 female camels plus their young, 40 cows, 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys, and 10 male donkeys. And I want to sing a partridge and a pear tree, but that's not what was in there. He gave him all this stuff. And he said, he divided them into thirds. He sent one third of them. And he said, when you come to Esau, say, this is from your servant Jacob to you, my lord Esau. And he said, by the way, Jacob's on his way. And then another group with a whole bunch of other animals comes and says, this is from your servant Jacob to the lord Esau. And Jacob is coming along behind. Third group comes, same thing. And so Esau is seeing all this stuff come, and we find out in verse number 20 of that chapter, he said, I say, moreover, your servant Jacob is behind us, for he thought I may appease him with the presents, and he goes, that go on before me. So Jacob was scared, so he's sending all this stuff. This is an example of a propitiation, but it is also an example of human effort to solve a spiritual problem. The problem was forgiveness. And stuff does not satisfy the Lord in forgiveness. The problem is all this human effort to solve the problem really wasn't going to cut it. Goats, camels, donkeys, they're going to fix a problem? Not really. And on top of that, Esau didn't need any more animals. The last thing he needed was animals. So here's Jacob. Sends all the people across the river. He's fearful. He's anxious. He's feeling guilty. He's worried about what's going to happen. He's alarmed at the 400 men that are with Esau that are on their way. And he has a wrestling match with God. God touches, God changes. When he gets done with that wrestling match, he's got a new name. His name is now Israel, not Jacob. Jacob meant cheater. Israel means one who has met God. He's got a new limp. God touched his hip. That was last week's message. And he's walking around limping as a reminder that God's in charge. I could have taken your life, but I just gave you a limp instead. And he comes out with a new confidence. Now, not certainty. I mean, he's still not certain what's going to happen, but I think he's a little more confident as he gets ready to cross the river. The absence of fear is not the certainty of deliverance. Three Hebrew children weren't afraid to go into the fiery furnace, but they weren't sure they were going to be delivered. They said, we're trusting a God who can deliver us if he chooses. But whether he does or not, we're still willing to go into the furnace. So that's Jacob. He's going across this river now with this new confidence. Let's look at chapter 33, all of that in review. Verse 1. Jacob lifted up his eyes and he looked, and behold, Esau was coming and 400 men with him. Boy, that would send chill up and down my spine. It did his, I'm sure. So he divided the children among Leah and Rachel and the two female servants, and he put the servants with their children in front, then Leah with her children, then Rachel and Joseph last of all, and he himself went on before them. So here he is, getting ready to go meet his brother. He had already sent everybody across the river the night before. He spent the night. He had that encounter wrestling match with God. He is now on the other side of the river, and he organizes how he's going to do this. So he takes all of the servants and their children, and he lines them up. The mother's in the front, then the children. And then he takes Leah and all her children and lines them up behind the servants. Then he takes Rachel and Joseph, her son, and puts them last. So they're all in order, ready to march forward and meet Esau. And Jacob goes first. And look what it says. He says, and he went, and he himself went on before them. So he's leading the way, servants and their children, Leah and her children, Rachel and her son, and he is bowing down himself to the ground seven times before he came, until he comes near to his brother. And I'm not sure. I tried to find out what bowing down to the ground means. I'm not sure that it meant that he got down on his face. I think it means that everything that I read means that he got down on his knees and he put his hands down in front of him and he got up and he went a little bit farther. Seven times. Now, what that symbolizes is that I am submitting myself to you. I am your servant. I am making myself your slave. You are superior. You're all the Lord over me. You're in charge of me. And Jacob does that seven times, even though God had already told him he was going to be the father of a great nation, that he was going to bless him, that he was going to put him back in the promised land. But Jacob, again, in a human effort to solve a problem, is doing human things. And he's bowing himself to his brother. And he does it seven times. I can picture him on that seventh time getting up off of his knees, and just maybe his stomach is in a knot, butterflies, and he's nervous because he doesn't know what happens, and he sees Esau off in the distance and 400 men behind him, and he stands up that seventh time, kind of just surrendering himself, and Esau comes running towards him, and maybe he's bracing himself for it, but the closer Esau gets, the more that Jacob sees that there are tears running down Esau's face, and Esau runs up and embraces his brother and cries on his neck, and the reunion is there. And Esau looks around, and he says, dude, what are all these people? Remember when he left, all he had was his staff. He had nothing of his own. And so Esau, I don't know if he said dude, but in Hebrew he probably would have. He said, what are all these people? He said, this is my family. So he introduces his servants, he introduces Leah, he introduces Rachel, he introduces all the kids. And then Esau says, what's the deal with you sending me all this stuff? He said, I don't want your stuff. I don't need your stuff. I got more stuff than I need. I got more camels and donkeys than I know what to do with. Keep your stuff. And Jacob talks to him. He says, no, God's blessed me. And the only reason I have all these things that I can give to you, and remember how much he gave away? He still had a whole lot in reserve. He said, God's blessed me, and I want you to have it. And Esau says, all right, I'll take it. But I don't need it. And so Esau comes to him. Remember, the whole point of this is reconciliation. So Esau comes to him. He says, hey, come on, come with our group, come set up camp, live with us over in Seir, and we'll have a great family, we'll build a family compound, come on, live with us. And Jacob says, okay, we will, sure. And then Esau says, well, come on, let's go. And Jacob says, well, you know, I got goats and calves and others that are nursing, and they can't travel as fast as you with your 400 men, and I got mothers and little children. You go on ahead, and we'll catch up to you. We'll come there, and we'll meet you. So everything is good, right? Well, except for the fact that Jacob didn't follow his brother. In fact, the scripture tells us he goes a completely different direction. In verse 15 of 33:16, it says, Esau returned that day on his way to Seir, but Jacob journeyed to Succoth, and he built a house, and he made booths for his livestock, and therefore the name of the place today is called Succoth. And Jacob came safely to the city of Shechem, and he bought land there in the land of Canaan. He never went to where his brother was. You say, wait a minute. I thought the whole point of going back over the river and getting back into the promised land was to restore a relationship with his brother. It was. But you remember what I told you? Sometimes it's harder to be forgiven than it is to forgive. And I think Jacob really struggled with that. He was invited to go, but he didn't go. And he goes and he builds an altar. And when he builds the altar there where he bought the property in Shechem, it says there in verse 20, it says there he erected an altar and he called it Elohei Israel. He called the place God, or the altar, God of Israel. Now remember, Israel is now his name. And he says, you are the God of the one who has had a face-to-face encounter with God. So, interesting story, right? So what do we get out of it? Well, let me give you some things real quickly. Number one, sometimes it's a whole lot more difficult to be forgiven than it is to forgive. Jacob wanted to restore a relationship, but in order to be forgiven, he had to admit that he was wrong and he had to come humbly and do all that. I'm not sure he did, because he never really reconciled with his brother Esau. In fact, the descendants of Esau became enemies of Israel. Second truth we can learn: accepting forgiveness requires a whole lot of humility and a lot of courage. For you to accept the forgiveness, someone comes to you and says, "Would you forgive me?" You got to humble yourself, and it takes an awful lot of courage to accept forgiveness, because you have to admit that you did wrong. The third thing that we can learn is that as long as we live in fear, as long as we're afraid, and for 20 years I believe Jacob was afraid, as long as we live in fear, we're never going to be able to forgive or be forgiven. And that fear has got to go. The fourth truth is that healing begins with a confession and the acceptance of God's forgiveness. The healing will begin when you are willing to confess the issues that you're facing and accept the forgiveness that God will give you. Is healing possible? Yes. Is it hard? Yes. I think the hardest part about being forgiven is believing that even being forgiven is possible, because we walk along and we carry an awful lot of guilt in our life. And we bring a lot of stuff into play to try and fix it. Well, he sent hundreds of animals in an effort to appease his brother. And how many things do we do to try and appease God or appease someone else when it's God who wants to offer forgiveness freely? We wind up being living in guilt. We wind up tied to our sin. We wind up chained to a jailer called fear instead of believing that God can forgive us or that someone else really can forgive us. So back to the very first question: what's harder, to be forgiven or to have someone or to offer forgiveness? Well, it depends on what side of the coin you're on, I guess, what side of the aisle you stand. We try an awful lot of things to make things work, to fix stuff. Whether it's a relationship, whether it's a physical problem, an emotional problem, a problem with family members, a financial problem, we throw everything we can humanly at it, trying to solve the problem when God has the solution. And it's a matter of trusting him and having enough courage, enough humility to admit that we need his forgiveness and need his help, and enough courage to let go of trying to do it yourself and allow God to take care of it.